Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the gardening show today. We have our usual cast of characters. Bob Graves is a horticulturalist and co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. He's also been an avid hands-on in-the-dirt gardener for 40 years. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. We welcome your calls right now. Get in line. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also feel free to email us, voxpop@wamc.org. You could tweet your questions and comments at @WAMCVoxPop. You could go to our Facebook page, WAMC Radio, and there'll be a Vox Pop post there, or you can post your comments on our website, WAMC.org/VoxPop. Gentlemen, nice to have you back. I guess the summer is now winding down.
It's getting closer. There.
I always think summer lasts well into the end of September.
Well, it technically does,
yeah,
right?
Technically, yeah.
But there are things to be done
green.
Now.
As far
ahead.
As gardening, it lasts even longer than that. We got a long ways to go yet. Lots of things to do.
So the excitement hasn't stopped?
Absolutely not.
At Fadigan's or Ward's? That's good. But there are things to do to plan ahead now for
next year. Planning ahead is probably, this is probably the perfect time. So you're out there looking at your vegetable garden or your cutting garden or your perennial border, and you can kind of take a look and assess what did well and what didn't. You know, how are those zucchinis? You know, did they crash on you, or how's your tomatoes doing? You know, do you want to plant more?
Great time to pick up some value in fall sales too, and a lot of plant materials on sale this time of year.
You mean stuff that you can save for next year, or
no,
things you could plant for
right now? Yeah, we got lots of time to plant yet. We'll continue planting well into November.
And what things will thrive here as the summer wears into fall?
Well, fall is an awesome time to. In fact, it's arguably one of the best times to install plant material, perennials, trees, shrubs, almost anything, because you can get it in the ground. It's cool. It doesn't require an exuberant amount of moisture or water to keep that plant thriving. So getting plants in the ground, those roots will keep establishing themselves right up to the point where the ground pretty much freezes. So, and then they'll be in the ground ready to go, literally wake up in the spring. And
For us, that's been well through October and into November, last 10, 15 years.
I wonder if this will be another rough winter. It seems like the summer didn't really have too many hot spells, long stretches of heat.
You just never know.
But the Farmer's Almanac says it's supposed to be another long, cold, hard, relatively hard winter.
Do you buy into the Farmer's Almanac?
No, I just follow but they keep me posted. I got a lot of, on the streets, the word on the street is they let me know, and they tell me what's going on. And
they have kind of a secret formula for figuring it out, and I guess if I knew what it was,
They keep me posted, but I can't give no secrets away.
Right, take it with a grain of salt. Right, let's go with Matthew in East Greenbush. Matthew, you're first.
Hi. I have a couple of questions. One, I planted horseradish a couple of years ago, and it seems to have established really well. And I'd like to harvest and make some various horseradish things, but I don't want to destroy the plant for future growth. So how do I go about doing that? And then my other question is generally speaking about herbs, and I'm guessing that they're all probably different. I know enough to cut off the blooms to keep the plant from expending energy into the seeds and to continue to grow leaves, but how far down do I cut? I mean, I've had poor success with rosemary regrowing, but better success with basil. Is there a kind of a rule of thumb?
Okay.
Oh, that's a lot of great stuff. So horseradish, we did just double check on harvesting it. Fall is a great time to do that. So after a frost, that by waiting until the soil gets cool and the plant has been touched by frost, the roots will be at their strongest. So that's the time to harvest it. You dig it all up, or you can leave some behind if you want. But if you dig it all up, sort it out, take half or two-thirds of it away, and then replant the smaller pieces back in that same area, and they will regrow for next year.
So smaller pieces. So I see giant leaves. So underneath, I don't really know what's there because I've never dug it up yet.
You'll have very large roots, very large kind of brownish tubers, elongated tubers that you will be digging up. They'll be fairly deep. So you want to loosen the soil around them. You're going to be digging down, you know, at least a foot or so to get them free of the ground. Otherwise, they'll be holding on for dear life.
Got it.
Okay. Matthew, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Norman in Great Barrington. Norman, you're on the gardening show.
I have I'm inundated with ground ivy, okay. And I'd like to know if there's anything I can do about it without poisoning the neighborhood.
Well, there are, you know, basically any good organic lawn program starts with the soil, making sure you've got good pH, good organic matter, that you're mowing high and watering infrequently and deeply. Now, to get rid of an established weed problem, there are both organic and non-organic forms of broadleaf weed control. However, anytime you go after ground ivy, you really need to go after it more than once with whatever you use, whether it be an organic or a synthetic form of weed control. You need to hit it, and then again, maybe a month later, hit it again, and then maybe the next year, hit it, and then a month later, hit it again. So it'll take you perhaps even a year to gain control over it.
What's a safe product that, as Norman says, won't harm the neighbors?
Well, there's a lot of products that are actually based on vinegars, strong vinegars, and also citrus oils in there, like really strong concentrated lemon juices with strong vinegars. And we're talking about the kind of vinegar we're talking about is not the kind that you would go to a store. The typical store-bought vinegar, I believe, is like about 3 to 5% vinegar.
And those would be non-selective. They're going to kill most everything that they hit.
Including grass and everything else.
Yeah,
that's right.
Some selective or one selective broadleaf weed killer out now that's basically an iron compound. And I've forgotten the trade name of it. It's out there in a couple different forms right now. But there is an iron compound available that's an organic selective.
Is that like Iron-X?
No, that's a supplement. This would be a different one, and I apologize. I've forgotten the name of it.
And I might actually recommend a different approach, too, would be to till or disturb the entire area. If you have a large area you're trying to work with, then renovating the entire thing with a shallow disruption of the plant, raking off those plants, possibly tilling again so that you have created, and this is the organic method, to create a bare situation and then overseeding, you know, with new grass seed and just beginning anew.
In September being the ideal time to do that, too, to establish new grass.
Thanks, Norman. So when you say use these high-test vinegars, is really all you're doing adjusting the pH?
No, it's actually burning foliage. It's a foliar burner. It literally just disrupts all, it ruins the tissue. And it looks like literally it got sprayed with something that's nasty, except that it's not really a nasty chemical. It's just vinegar and citrus oils. Now,
but it will nail the grass as well.
Yeah, now that's really great for spot spraying a lawn. I mean, I'm a tree man, so obviously, you know, less concerned about turf grass and more concerned about trees and shrubs and woody plants, because turf and ornamental trees and plants are fighting for the same nutrients. So again, it's a turf war, pun intended there.
Yeah.
But if it's in the garden and it's in your landscape beds or it's in the mulch rings around your trees, the vinegar type based herbicides work really, really well. Just keep it off the tree's trunk, spray the leaves you want to get rid of. And like Bob said, it usually even those take a few applications because you're not, it doesn't absorb it into the root system and kill the root. It could refoliate. And
ground ivy creates a mat. It starts in one location, some disturbed area where you maybe have turned the mower a little too sharp and made a little divot in the lawn, jumps in that. And then it sort of tends to, as its name says, creep out and create a large mat. So a lot of that actually can get pulled up. You can actually remove that by hand, which is obviously an organic, you know, mechanical method.
Yep, and it does pull easy
and
too,
leave yourself, it does, leave yourself just those little pockets in which to then possibly treat with the vinegar if you need to, or cultivate those out and then overseed. So, I mean, this can all be done by hand. If you're talking about 2 acres, boy, it's a lot of work. But if you're talking about, you know, 2,000 square feet, it's not so bad.
Okay. Yeah. And if your lawn's not too bad and you have spots here or there, you spray it with the vinegar type thing or as Greg says, till it out, you end up with a lot of these little holes. But as Bob mentioned, this is a great time to reseed. So if you're just getting little pockets here or there, throwing a little seed, overseed, and they'll fill right in no time at all. Fall is a great time to establish turf.
Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Joel in Cohoes. Joel, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So, tomato plants. I got several, you know, some medium to large green tomatoes, but I'm still getting some new growth and flowering. I'm wondering if it's wise to trim the new growth so those other tomatoes will ripen maybe a little bit quicker.
I don't think trimming will make any difference. The rule of thumb is that if you don't have flowers pollinated, usually, at least in the Berkshires, that is, if they're not showing a fruit or a pollinated by the end of August, it's not likely they will form a fruit. So any growth that happens now is not going to turn into a fruit. The fruit you have is, the best you can do. So even watering, is probably the best thing you can do if we get into some dry weather, making sure that you water. We haven't really had that much dry weather.
Yeah, tomatoes do not like fluctuation in moisture levels. And a lot of times that's the problem people have, particularly if they're growing them in some sort of raised bed or container, is they don't like a change in moisture levels.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call. And was it a good year for tomatoes?
I think so.
Yeah.
Blight wasn't a problem this year?
Not so much.
No, it wasn't.
They
actually
were a little slow, but it was a cool June. Yeah. And but they came through pretty well in the end.
We didn't even bother this year. We've had such bad level of failure the last couple of years. And of course, this is the year we should have done it.
Yeah, we got hit hard last year, but this year we had a pretty bumper crop of tomatoes in our property.
All righty. Let's take a break here, Mr. Zach the Engineer. 1-800-348-2551. Back with more of the Gardening Vox Pop next.
Support comes from Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts. Locally owned and operated for over 51 years, offering annuals, perennials, nursery stock, organic fertilizer, and advice. HadleyGardenCenter.com. Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York, hosting a national symposium on life insurance compliance November 12th through the 14th at the Gideon Putnam Resort, Saratoga Springs, with registration now open. CurranCompliance.com. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community. Berkshire.coop. And Bethel Woods Center for the Arts. At the Museum at Bethel Woods, an exhibit of photojournalist Eddie Adams' portraits speak truth to power, human rights defenders who are changing our world. BethelWoodsCenter.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551, the telephone number. I'm Ray Graff, joined by Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward, and it's the Gardening Show. And Fred, what's going on over at the Landis Arboretum?
We're gearing up for probably our second busiest time of the year, which is our fall plant sale. And that's going to happen this year, September 13th and 14th. That'll be a Saturday, Sunday, 10 to 4. And we'd like to say we have, a great variety of trees, all different sizes, shrubs, perennials. We will have some mums and things like that that would be more annuals.
Will you be there to give advice? In other words,
yep, absolutely.
Somebody buys something, we'll want to know, is this the right time to plant it, et cetera, et cetera?
Yep, absolutely. I'll be there all weekend, and we also have a great panel of experts that volunteer and on the sales floor of the Arboretum. So we like to say we can pretty much answer everyone's question and encourage people to bring their questions with you to the sale. And we also have a great variety of used books with a focus, of course, on gardening, but other topics as well. And I like to say one of the best bake sales around, too. So
I can't go wrong.
September 13th, 14th this year, 10 to 4.
All right. This is one that came in via email during the break. This is from Bonnie. And Bonnie says, I have two variegated maple trees, approximately 10 feet tall, that were beautiful this summer. These trees usually drop their leaves earlier than all the other trees, but this year, sooner than usual, they are almost completely bare already. Thoughts?
Yep, that would be my, something's stressing those trees out. And, without seeing it for sure, having a little bit more information there, it's hard to say exactly what's causing it, but stressed trees drop them leaves a lot faster than a tree that's not stressed. And the species you've got to be
talking about.
The
rain that we had this year was unusual, and we got a lot in some places and not in others.
Yeah.
So I would guess drought stress, because there are some areas that went 2 or 3 weeks without an appreciable rain.
And that tree, if we're correct, is probably a Norway maple.
Probably, yeah.
And tar spot is something that wasn't really dramatic this year for the Berkshires, but if you had a heavy rain area, it could have been.
And we're not quite sure where Bonnie is, so maybe Bonnie will call in later.
If it's completely defoliated, though, this time of year, and it's a Norway variety, which I tend to think it is, if it is dry, it's going to make the problem worse. But my guess, there may be something to do with maybe spiraling roots, girdling roots.
Okay. That said, if it's probably set buds this year, and unless there's some significant trunk issue, as Fred mentioned, it probably is going to leaf out again. It's time. It's
in other words, so not Bonnie shouldn't be too concerned about next season.
Not to panic yet.
Okay. Yeah, not panic yet.
All right, let's go to back to the phones and Marianne and Poughkeepsie. Marianne.
Yes, hello.
You're on.
My question is, I have two hydrangea bushes in my front yard. They're 11 years old, and I usually get great flowers. And this summer, not a single flower, just the green leaves. And I was wondering why this happened, and what can I do about it?
You weren't alone. we're assuming these are the ones that turn pink or blue right away?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that variety of or species of hydrangea was affected by the extreme cold weather this past year. And that plant does need to have some wood survive above ground. In other words, in the spring, leaves and flower buds have to sprout off of the actual wood that's still there above ground in order for you to have flowers in a season. And if we have a very cold winter, the wood dies to the ground, and you get all the sprouting from the rootstock, from the base.
Yeah, not to worry. This past winter was extremely destructive to a lot of things. My hydrangeas looked completely dead and came back. And I got a flower or two, but not many. But I suspect next year, given this winter is not as severe as last, we'll be fine.
Well, the Farmer's Almanac says it'll be worse.
Heck, you never know.
And Fred swears by that.
You never know.
Well, I figured it was the winter, but that's great to know for sure.
And there's really nothing you can do.
No, I mean, we do recommend mulching the base of the plant in the Berkshires. It's a little cold for that hydrangea, so we don't have as good a luck as you do. 15 years in a row is pretty darn good.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
So we do recommend pushing some compost or some heavy soil around the base of the plant in November and December, and that will help to insulate some of that wood. Is it perfect? No, but it can help.
Yeah. Right. Also, sometimes creating a burlap screen can help protect it against some of those harsh winter winds and protect some of those flower buds, too. So I've seen that used with some pretty good degrees of success.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yep, you got
it. Marianne. Let's go over to Mary in Grahamsville. Mary, you're on.
Yes, I have a flowering bush tree, and it's got this black stuff on it. It's on the branch. It's really black. It's about 3 inches long.
Does it look like a lump?
What type of tree is it?
Yeah, not about 3 inches long. Yeah, it goes on the branch.
It sounds like it would be a disease called black knot. Now, Bob was wondering what species of tree it was that would help to narrow it.
Is it a plum or
one of the flowering trees that comes in the spring?
Probably a flowering cherry or plum.
Yeah.
Then it would be guaranteed to say that it would be a disease called black knot, which can be a real problem on trees. And the way to control that, at least organically, and probably the most effective way anyways, is to keep right on top of that. If you only see one piece of it, that's good news. The way to get rid of that is to use a pair of use a pruner, come in, cut it below that, far away from the black knot. If you have an option, take that branch off. Don't put that branch into the compost. Put it in a garbage bag. Get it off site. And if there's more than one of those black knots on the tree, then anytime you make a pruning cut, use rubbing alcohol, spray the pruner in between each cut because you could spread it literally from branch to branch. But the disease is called black knot. It is common. If you keep right on it and prune those off, you should be able to stay ahead of it. But once it gets established and you get them all, it literally will fill the canopy up with those trees.
If it's really bad, it's get rid of the tree.
It's right. Once it gets bad, it's
that pruning should be done, I believe, in the spring before bud break, if I'm
not mistaken. Well, I was just sitting on my bench, and I just looked over, and I saw this thing there. And I said, what the heck is that? And then I looked at it.
If it's not too bad, go ahead and trim it out.
Yeah.
Okay. And also, I have a Japanese maple that has white spots on all the leaves. What is that about?
That's probably, I've seen that. It's not probably anything. They're little marks, literally little damaged
spots. Yeah, like little
spots.
Dots, like little white spots.
That just happens at the end of the season. It's not uncommon.
It's usually a desiccation injury. The leaves have dried out a little bit and the tissue's flaked away.
Yeah, not to be alarmed with that.
No worries.
The black knot's more of a potentially a problem. Okay. The white spots on a maple wouldn't worry too much.
Okay. And one other question. I have some hostas in one spot, and they got pruned by the deer, and now they're like little babies, but they're not seem to doing anything at all now.
Yeah, they won't
Should I transplant them to a different place?
They'll get big. They'll look great again next year.
Yep.
And they're done. The season is over, so you can't expect them to have the same size after they've been pruned back as they would otherwise.
But they will live, and they will come back next year, no problem.
All right. Mary, thank you so much for the call. It is Vox Pop on WAMC. Bob Graves is here from Fatigan's Nursery. Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum. Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery. I'm Ray Graff. And back to the phones we go. Lynn in Shelburne. Lynn.
Hello, Lynn.
Going once and gone. Let's go to Lisa in Albany. Lisa. Let's press the button. Lisa, are you there?
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, the ground ivy discussion.
Yes.
And I, just a couple of comments to add to this discussion, and also if my comments are wrong, then to like get myself corrected as well.
Okay.
And then I had a question about hanging plants, but basically it's about ground ivy. I, for years and years, was fighting ground ivy, particularly in certain sections of my lawn in shade. They tended to be more shaded areas, and I didn't want to use any applications, so I took it out by hand and got really skilled at it, I think, but it never really defeated it. And then the circumstances in the yard changed because a tree was removed, and there was a lot more sun. And the grass that I had put in included creeping fescue. And also, I don't mind having clover in my lawn. I like having clover in my lawn. I think it contributes to the soil and everything. And I think that what I saw was the competition from the creeping fescue or whatever the grass mix was and the clover and then the sun, which the grasses want, caused them to be too powerful for the ground ivy to compete with them. And the ground ivy disappeared without my doing anything.
It is a weed that, as Greg indicated before, takes advantage of any sort of problem in the ground. You know, if your pH is off, if you've got some shade, if the ground has been disturbed.
Soil compaction.
Yeah. It does thrive in areas where grass is having more problem.
And grass, loves sun. And you know, creating a better environment for the grasses is what you did in that, so that's perfect.
Yep.
So for me, my general thing, given that I only have so many hours to spend on my lawn and I don't have to have a golf-type lawn, a golf course-type lawn, is where it's more shady, the grasses are having trouble anyway, the ground ivy has lovely flowers in the spring, it's not interested in anything else, it's okay,
it
and
most.
In the sun areas I have grass. So
when you have lemons, make lemonade.
I like it. Yeah. That's a great attitude.
Well, the other thing was on hanging plants, and I've seen this over the years, and I, you know, I and some other gardeners would say, okay, this is just what we have to put up with, but maybe you'll have an answer for us. Toward the end of the summer, or maybe by the time you're hitting the end of July, like you've gotten your hanging plants from the nurseries, you work really hard, you feed them, you water them, blah, 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 but like toward the end of July, they're starting to really look bad no matter what you do. And maybe even by now, some of them, particularly like if they have petunias, verbena, they're dying.
Yep.
And I know some people, you know, I'll look at that and say, oh, my God, what have I done wrong? And I've come to the conclusion we haven't done anything wrong, that they've hit the end of what they're going to do. But I may well be very wrong, and so I want to get your insight.
What we do to try to maintain those is extremely important to keep up on your watering and fertilizing. I mean, we water some things once a day, sometimes twice a day, and we fertilize at least once a week. Those are heavy feeders, and in order to keep them looking well, you really have to keep up on your cultural.
Another thing you can consider is making sure that you're starting with a large pot so that a small 8 or 10 inch pot is not going to make it through the summer as well as a 12 or 14 inch pot.
Yeah.
So starting large is
good
better.
Okay.
And then good sun exposure. So in June, you know, May and June, the sun is everywhere and your petunias are just loving it. But by August, it may be a little shadier wherever that location is. And that change in sunlight can make a difference. And then lastly, trimming the plant, just going in and removing a little bit of the plant, not letting it get too big. for its spot, so that it's regrowing from the top or the center.
Yeah, keep pushing new growth. You don't want them to get shaggy.
Yeah, and that.
Yeah, not too stringy. Yeah, yeah.
And so it's a process, and it's, you know, it's gardening in that container. It should be something you have to do regularly.
All right, Lisa, thank you so much for the call. It is Vox Pop. It is The Gardening Show, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Mike in East Greenbush. Hi, Mike, you're on.
I'm not Mike.
Okay.
I'm Wolfgang in Pownell.
Well, that's nowhere near Mike, but the sheet says Mike, but whatever you want to call yourself, you're on.
Okay, thank you. I have some question about some apple trees. I live on a very rocky hillside, and I have some open space, so I've put in three apple trees over the last number of years. Probably one is 8 years old, and the other two are maybe 4 or 5. And we have well water up here, so I'm loath to spray or use anything that can get into the water supplies. I have some sort of leaf mold that shows up as a red spot, and then the leaves brown out, and then there's some sort of little growth on the bottom.
Yep.
So I'm trying to pick these leaves off and get them off site so they won't recontaminate. Just wondered what you recommended. Well, and what your ideas are on fertilization of these trees, because they don't have a lot of growth every year due to the poor rocky condition of the soil. Yeah.
Well, what you've got for the red spot first, we'll deal with that part of the question. It's called cedar apple rust. It's a rust disease, which is basically a fungus disease, and there are resistant varieties to these. Apples are all basically plants that are in the rose family, and anything that's in the rose family tends to be more problematic in terms of like some of the diseases and insects that can be attributed to those plants. So anytime, first and foremost, moving forward, any new trees, try to see if you can get ones that are a little more what they call resistant to those normal diseases, because resistant varieties are the first step in not having to spray anything and having really good, looking leaves and fruit, of course, that follow, and flowers and the whole nine yards. But that being said, even resistant variety plants will sometimes get the diseases in, some amount. So the fact that you have this disease is almost never life-threatening for the plants. They do tend to make the leaves fall off, and therefore the growth is not that good. But the time of the year that the leaves are going to fall off is going to be at the end of the summer, and my guess is that you're seeing more of the leaves falling off now as opposed to like earlier
there
in the summer.
There are some organic fungicides, too, that he could use if he wanted. Sulfur would be one. Serenade would be another. It's very difficult to control those diseases by hand-picking leaves, because it's an airborne disease, and it's going to show up.
And so as a, as an orchard caretaker, preventative treatments for diseases is what's always best. So this is something that you should anticipate next year and treat before you actually see any signs of it. Typically, rust spores are floating around sometime in the middle of June. So these trees could begin to get infected by the middle of June. So treatment prior to that, and then throughout the summer.
Right, because at this point in the game, spraying any sort of fungicide on there is not going to help it. But, culturally, there is some method, there is some belief that by getting those leaves out of there as they fall, there is a lot of inoculum fungal spores that will overwinter. So getting those out of there is certainly going to be a help.
Okay.
If you have a cedar around you, my guess is probably the classic Eastern red cedar would be the main culprit, but other junipers could also attribute to that. If you have a cedar and you're not fond of it, removal of the cedar actually will be the alternate host to that. So for that disease to complete its life cycle, it needs both plants. But if you don't have it, that doesn't mean that you're not going to get it, because your neighbors might. It doesn't need to be really close. It could be even fairly far away and still get that problem. Now, the other part of your question was about fertilizer. And fertilizing is definitely a good thing to do in general. And the time to get that down, really, you're heading into one of the nicest times to fertilize. And, usually I wait till about half of the leaves are falling off those trees, and that's a really good time to start to put down some organic fertilizer. So coming into that season soon. But late summer fertilizing is not recommended, because sometimes that could attribute to late season growth and therefore get damaged by winter injury. So wait till about half the leaves are gone, throw down some fertilizer, and that'll certainly help your situation for next year.
And if I could just add to a large mulched area under the tree, especially for poor soil conditions, so a 3 to 5 foot diameter circle where you remove the grass and the weeds and add a mulch material, a compost, if you will go a long ways to strengthening those trees.
Yep.
Okay, I thank you very much.
You got
Thanks, Wolfgang. Sorry about the name once again. But before the break, gentlemen, here's one that came in from the Ellenville area from Jamie. Says, maybe it's been okay for you super farmers, but I and everyone I know have experienced a summer where there has been little fruit, and what has come is dry and tasteless. Tomatoes get yellow leaves with brown spots from bottom up. Even my potatoes had few flowers and little production. Now my pumpkins and watermelons have the leaves going white from the base of the plant and going out. Like the tomatoes, the top of the plant is fine, continuing to grow. Too many squash flowers wither rather than bloom. Like I said, this is normal for apparently my friends in the Ulster and Sullivan County area. P.S. I water every day.
Yeah,
so about 30 seconds here. Go ahead.
There you go. It sounds like you got a lot of fungal issues going on.
Too much watering?
The less you can get water on the leaves, the better. I mean, if you're going to water every day, you need to do it in a soaker manner so that you're getting the ground wet and not the leaves. But typically, unless things are in real small containers, you don't need to water them every day. That sounds like a bit much.
Okay.
There's crop rotation is important to control diseases and insects as well. So if you're planting the same crops in the same location, you can start to build up perennial issues. Good soil fertility, as we've mentioned, is really going to make a big difference, get everything to grow strongly and produce right away, so we're not expecting it to happen in September.
And some of those brown spots on the tomatoes may also be nutrient related, like calcium will create often bottom rot, and it's often considered a disease, but it's really not. It's a nutrient deficiency, so you might have a nutrient issues going on there as well.
All right, we're going to take a short break here. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. You can also email, as people have done, voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back.
Comes from the Henyon Bakery, since 1993 offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more. Where eyewear is an art. Facebook or VisionExcelEyeCare.com. The Honest Wade Food Co-op, located at 100 Water Valley Ave in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more. Honestwait.coop. And Capital District Scottish Games, featuring 500 pipers, 200 drummers, entertainment, and more. Altamont Fairgrounds, this Saturday and Sunday. scotgames.com.
We're discussing the email we just talked about, and Bob mentioned earlier in the show the fact that some areas of the listening area got a lot of rain.
A lot of rain, and some did not.
So it's possible that in the Ellenville area...
could have been wetter.
Yeah, okay. So that's that one. Let's go back to the phones, and Josh in Albany. Josh, you're on. What's wrong with the buttons here? Josh, are you there? Are you there?
Yep, I'm there. Can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Yep, go ahead.
I have a similar question to the gentleman that was asking about pruning his tomato plants, pruning the non-productive branches. I have a ton of watermelon that came into my garden this year, and I've heard from a lot of people that it's hard to grow, and I'm wondering if trimming back those non-productive branches will help the productive branches fruit ripen faster.
I'm going to guess yes, and I'm sort of leaning from the pumpkin standpoint that I do know that it does work with the giant pumpkins, but I could double check on that if you wanted to email me or just to...
What is the email address, Greg?
So it's info@wardsnursery.com. Mm-hmm. And if you want to email that quick, I'll just double check. But I think that's possible, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, beautiful. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Josh. Let's go over to Lynn in Shelburne. Lynn, is your phone working now?
Yes, it is. I'm not sure how we got cut off, but I'm so glad. I just love your program there. I can't help myself from calling in. And I've got a question for, I'm not sure, Bob, Greg, or Fred.
Well, how about all three of them?
How about all three?
All right.
That I have moss, and I like it, you know. I'm in a shaded area, and I love my moss. I don't have to mow my lawn very often, what there is of it, you know, whatever it is. But I've got lots of leaves. All I want to know is, where can I get a whole big bag of that deep, like, main moss seed so I can plant it all over?
Well, usually, you know, if you have conditions that are conducive to moss, you can take little bits of it, almost plugs of what you have, and mm-hmm. spread it around. You can go online. You can order moss seed. I mean, it is available. Uh-huh. I don't know precisely just where, but I think if you Google it, you'll...
It's not something that we have ever offered, so I don't have a
No,
specific...
most people come in looking to find out how to kill it when they're talking to us.
Go over to Lynn's house. That's easy.
No, I got lots of shade, and my house is...
And it's good that you like it, because it's very easy to grow in the shade, and that's the problem
Absolutely
most people
perfect.
Have. Yeah.
Walk barefoot in it, and it's just lovely.
Oh, that's good.
Anyway, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. One more thing. We had a lot of caterpillars this year. Anybody notice that?
I noticed the, what's the caterpillar that, gypsy moth caterpillar. Was very heavy in last year in right on the border state, and then this year we saw none of it.
I haven't seen any. No, I haven't seen anything too heavy.
But generally, there's caterpillars everywhere. I mean, that's what all the warblers are eating right now.
Mm. Are the caterpillars that you're talking about? Kind of tree are they on? Are they on all different kinds of trees or more?
A lot of them are coming off the oak tree. There's some on the back of plants that are not really conducive for butterflies that I wouldn't want to kill. But there's a whole bunch of them that little white fuzzy ones and
Little white fuzzy ones are called hickory tussock moth larvae, and they're real common. This year is actually quite a few. So of the few caterpillars that I have seen, those guys I have seen, but they're not a huge problem for big pest for plants.
I do have a shagbark hickory. And then a whole bunch of little green ones, all kinds of green ones. And there's these little fuzzy ones that are not caterpillars or what you call them, gypsy moths.
Hickory tussock moth larvae are the little white ones, which is probably because you have hickories there. And those, I would tell you, not to really touch because there is a reaction that can get into your skin with those.
I mean,
it's not bad, but I wouldn't, not something you want to squeeze. But I would
just leave them alone,
stay away, and they shouldn't really bother your hickory much either.
Let the warblers eat them. Jim in Scotia. Jim, you're on. Jim.
Hello,
Jim. Is this Wolfgang?
Yes,
it's Jim.
Yep.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm calling because I have a Rosa Sharon plant, which we got in April of last year with flowers on it, beautifully flowered throughout the summer. I put fertilizer on it in the fall of 13. Winter came. It was tough, of course, as we know. And then the spring came, and I was negligent in not fertilizing it this spring. The leaves took until, I'd say, mid to late June to come out, and they have come out fully. And I haven't seen flowers on it, although there's the little bulbs in which the blossoms are hiding, and they're gradually getting larger, maybe a half inch or so wide in many cases. I was told to put some fertilizer on it about 3 weeks ago, about a cup, and then go every 2 or 3 weeks with the fertilization. I wanted to know if that should continue to be the course. I've got two rounds.
You don't want to continue to fertilize every 2 to 3 weeks. No.
Right.
Definitely not. The fact that it leafed out really late is actually really common with that plant. That's kind of like the characteristic. They leaf out really, really late. The fact that you didn't get any blooms may be attributed to the fact that it just had some winter injury this past year. Mm. But
First year transplanted on a lot of flowering plants, they concentrate on foliar growth, and they almost sort of skip flowering.
Rose of Sharon is sort of notorious for, if it comes out late, it's actually blooming on that new wood. It's actually just off its schedule. So if it was on schedule, it would be showing color by August 1st. If you're lucky now, it may be a month off and it'll show color in September. It's possible it won't do enough growing to open those blooms this year, but there's still a few weeks left. And ideally next year, it will come out and leaf out much sooner and everything will have caught up.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Here's one from email, Jerry writes, when is it appropriate to prune my shrubs? They seem to have exploded this year.
Well, that varies depending on what type of shrubs you have. So it is species sort of dependent. But the general rule is you can at least say trees and shrubs that bloom on previous seasons would. Now, that would be things like lilacs and forsythia and rhododendrons and azaleas. What they basically are doing is they're setting up the flower buds this year and will be blooming on those flower buds next year. And those types of shrubs are always pruned immediately after they bloom because, like, for example, lilac, it blooms. It's going to go right after bloom, setting up next year's flower buds. So immediately after that flower is done, get in there, prune it, and then you have way more flowers for next year. And then since we were talking about Rosa Sharon, that's an example of a tree or a shrub that would bloom on, as Greg said, current seasons would. So basically it grows, it sets a flower bud, and the flower opens, hopefully, if everything's going well. And those are usually pruned early spring prior to the growth occurring. Okay. So it really varies depending on what you've got.
You can prune things that other times, you're just going to lose flowers.
Correct.
You know, in the summertime, if you wanted to prune a forsythia or a lilac, you can do it. You're not going to hurt it, but you won't have as many flowers.
Absolutely.
And
yep.
I always find that to be true, that you get to the end of the summer and you go, oh gosh, that plant's too big. I need to, you know, I should have done something about it already, which is what we're all saying, that it's better to do these things earlier. But a little light pruning, you know, taking that branch or two out of the way so you can get around the garage or the
sooner
barn,
rather than later now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead and do that.
All right, let's go to Mishka in Niskayuna. You're on.
Hi there. I want to start out, however, saying that Fred plays a really sweet lead guitar. If nobody's heard him, they're a wonderful concert at the Arboretum.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Oh, that's nice.
Thanks very much.
Wow. I'll be darned. A groupie. Well done.
I'm not a groupie, okay, but I can appreciate good music.
Fair enough.
I have two issues. One, it seems like every single thing has attacked my garden this year, from the groundhogs that live next door and the bunnies to slugs and mildew and blight. But my question right now has to do with echinacea. Suddenly my echinacea has spots on the flowers. Do we know what that might be?
Spots on the echinacea.
Spots on the leaves or on the flowers?
On the flower.
Not off the top of my head. There is a wilt that can occur. It's a little kind of blackening of the entire stem, flower stem and leaves, and you get a little wilt, and all you do is prune that out. You can even remove some of the root system. Tends to be moisture related. That's the only thing that comes to mind in terms of an echinacea issue.
Does it look really healthy, the plant?
Some do and some don't. And I've had that brown black ridge to some of the flower. And I've removed all of that. But I thought this was just, oh, my goodness, I have a pretty echinacea. It has spots on it. I don't think so. It doesn't look...
If you want to email me a picture of that over at the Arboretum, fred@landisarboretum.org, okay, email me that. And, once I see it, we should be able to get it, narrowed down for you. It's not striking a bell with
any of
us here.
Okay, so it's fred@landisarboretum.org.
Yep, fred@landisarboretum.org.
Okay, so here's the second question, which is really different. In the last 3 or 4 weeks, I've had lupins, bluets, and what I call Bethlehem sage starting to branch out and even having some blooms. The bluets are actually in flower. And I did not cut them back.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you can get some repeat bloom on some things. Rhododendron can do that now as a woody plant. Lupins, if you had some young seedlings that wintered, that were very young, they certainly could possibly think that to bloom again. I mean, those kinds of things happen. It's not, it's not common, but it's not rare.
It seems so interesting that these three plants have done it, and they've also seemed to spread in the last month or so.
It's been cool and relatively moist, and that that's very conducive to growing.
It's been a good growing season.
Mm-hmm.
It's been really good this year. Thanks
a lot for the call.
You're welcome. Thanks for the answers.
Yep, bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right, let's go over to Joe in Galway. Joe, you're on.
Thank you. I have a problem with shrinking. I have a very shady area, and I want to know if we had any kind of a evergreen that would grow in the shade?
Yeah, there's, you know, I always ask people, you know, before we give that answer out, is how big do you want it to get? Because that's the...
About 6 feet, maybe, and I like to have it spread out, maybe 2 or 3 feet, and I could plant a whole row of them.
Yep, and then the other part of that, I guess my question back to you, is that, you know, there's shade, and then there's, like, light shade, moderate shade, heavy shade. Would you be able to classify that shade? Do you think it's more heavy or more like a lighter shade, or...
Actually, I have all three.
You got all three of those. Well, you know, I suppose we can all probably pick one real quick. But you know, my choice would be a dwarf hemlock. It's, you know, pretty much guaranteed to grow in that kind of condition. It sounds like so.
The thing you have to understand when you have this situation is the density of that plant is directly related to how much sun you get. So if it's really heavy shade, boy, it's not going to have a lot of growth. If it's lighter shade, then it may have a fair amount of growth.
Yeah. Okay. You know, so yew, hemlock. Yep. Boxwood, all could, you know, and holly, you know.
There's not a lot.
Like, all of those plants are evergreens and could tolerate some shade.
Okay. Yeah, but if you have more of a...
One other question. I heard the lady, previous caller, talk about molds. I was wondering, what is the best way to get rid of the grubs? Organic.
Yeah. Well, I have definitely used with success a product called Milky Spore Disease, and it's a naturally occurring disease. It's it kills the grubs. It does take about 3 years to start to get control.
Okay.
You're never going to get 100% control, but it is a product that once you put down, it once it's established in your lawn and it theoretically stays there. You don't have to reapply it.
Okay.
Really? I thought you had to reapply it 2 or 3 times a year.
No, Milky Spore Disease, once it's established, it's a one-time deal, but it does take sometimes up to 3 years to really get a good level of control there.
All right, here's one from email. This is from John in Stuyvesant. Hello, my Cornell Extension office tells me I have verticillium wilt. I think I saw a late-night infomercial about that. And I built raised beds for the tomatoes so I could introduce new soil, but the wilt came back right away. I get great fruit until the end of August, but now the foliage is all gone, dead and dry and yellow. What can I do organically to help this?
So that is the late blight. I got them correct. They're early blight and late blight.
Okay.
Early blight is the one that is serious and kills your plants entirely. Late blight comes around every year. It's a pretty common thing to get your plants through the end of August before they succumb is I'd say reasonable. He gets a B+.
Okay.
The rotation of the crop is before. So if he's using the same raised bed for those tomatoes, he's going to help harbor some verticillium, cleaning out all of the tomato debris, root system, old leaves, old fruit from the garden so that you're not wintering that over.
Be looking for varieties that are more resistant, too, because then, you know, when we talk about organic controls, one of the first ones is plant selection.
Yep.
All right, this is a kind of a follow-up from Bonnie. Early on in the show, we had an email from Bonnie who talked about her variegated maple trees that were dropping their leaves early, and you guys suggested that they were probably Norway maples.
That's my guess. Yep.
So Bonnie writes us back, they're Norway maples. They're about 20 feet from the south side of my house, which is normally the protected side. I had tar on my regular maples last year, none this year, but on the variegated maples. What could be stress factors that you refer to?
It would be root system problems associated with those trees. Most likely, my guess is that they may have been containerized plants or they may have been bald and burlap plants. Either way, they without seeing the tree, we wouldn't know for sure. But based on everything she said, my guess is that I would find what we would call spiraling roots or girdling roots on those trees.
Variegated maples are not always the really hardiest of the maples. They can have some problems just inherent to the nature of the plant.
And they do get some, you know, there are some, their leaves are variegated. They're mostly white. That doesn't bode well for the leaf to do well all summer. It has no chlorophyll. They're not strong leaves. So weather-related fungal infections can cause a sort of scalding look and an early leaf drop. It's not uncommon. The tree is uncommon. There's not too many of those trees out there, so it's not something we see all the time.
But if I recall your earlier advice, it's all is not lost. Next year could be okay.
Leave it alone. Make sure you fertilize it late, maybe water it if it needs it, but it's not lost.
But if the root system is compromised, which I've seen more than not, then you've got a problem, in which case we want to try to do something with that more earlier than not in terms of saving the tree. So if that person wants to email me again, fred@landisarboretum.org, I can't talk enough about girdling roots and tree problems. I mean, I do this all day long, and I just can't get enough of
it.
Okay,
fair enough.
So you're not going to bother me. Email me. I'd love to chat with you more about it.
And Greg Ward, what is your contact info?
So, yeah, wardsnursery.com is the website. 413-528-0166 is the phone number, and you can email from the website.
And Bob Graves?
It's fadigansnursery.com.
Well, you guys, great show. Thanks to everybody who called in. I apologize if you didn't make it through. We'll do it again next month. Support comes from Taft Farms, Great Barrington, now harvesting pesticide-free vegetables from their 200-acre IPM farm, sweet corn, berries, and 75 varieties of heirloom tomatoes, open daily, taftfarms.com. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking, rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. And Autobahn Service, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, offering service, repair, and diagnosis of imports, specializing in late model Volkswagen, Audi, and BMW, autobahntechnic.com. Thanks to Bob and Fred and Greg and all of you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Anonymous Sandy answered the calls. Thanks to our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, wow, the week has flown by. Tomorrow, it's a Food Friday. Stay tuned now for a news update.